Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grab some tape.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to the Film Guy Network on a stupendous Monday evening. We got a loaded show for you guys, as we always do, but I want to start tonight's show with this right here. Look, man, if you're ever going to overreact, there were ever a time to overreact to a scrimmage or a football practice or something other than a football game, now would be the time, right? As spring practice comes to a close, now is the time, if you're ever going to say anything like, quote, man, we're primed for a run, or the opposite of that, which is, man, we're going to suck something awful. If there's ever a time for an overreaction like that, now and today and right about now in this time frame of the year is the time to freak out. In fact, it's probably part of your contract as a fan to be a little bit overreactionary to right about now with regards to the timing and the calendar of the college football sport as a whole. So when Arch Manning goes out and completes all 10 of his first 10 passes, go 10 for 10, should have went 11 for 11 if Isaiah Bond doesn't drop a touchdown pass. But nonetheless, when Arch Manning goes out 10 for his first 10, should be 11 for 11. When he goes 19 for 25 for 355 and three TDs, boy, you go ahead and run to that timeline. You freak out about Arch Manning because it looked good. All right, if you're a Texas fan today, freak out. If you're an opposite of a Texas fan, if you're an SEC football fan, be a little worrisome. Be a little bit over-worrisome about Arch Manning's performance. Because, again, now is the time. If ever a time to overreact, right now would be the time. And I'm going to be honest with you. I've watched every throw. There was a 9.5-minute clip on social media today of every single throw Arch Manning made in that football game. And I saw a very ready quarterback. In fact, I saw a quarterback that will very soon, okay, he will not need long to confirm that he is indeed a Sunday quarterback playing on Saturdays. That's exactly how I feel about Arch Manning. I think he's going to be great. I think that's awesome. That was not the takeaway from me from this football game, even though he played on time. He played calm in the pocket. He showed obvious, guys, signs of awareness of the situation around him, whether that be the pocket management skills, okay, pocket's collapsing, I got to get rid of the ball, or, okay, pocket looks a little bit suspect, I got to check the ball out, or even, hey, pocket has collapsed, it's 3rd and 3, let's find something, let's get the ground, and let's pick up the sticks, right? Just general football awareness, I saw that in spades, right? I saw a good quarterback playing good football, as, by the way, I would expect any 5-star that spent 14 months with Steve Sarkisian. I would expect that guy to go out there and play really, really good. But that wasn't the part of this football game that I would be overreacting to, even though, like I said, look great. He looked great. He's going to be great. I don't doubt that at all. If I were overreacting to anything, however, from that football game, it would be about that defense. That defense, guys, finished 105th last year in total passing. Okay, 105th. And based off signs from Saturday, they don't look like they're going to get any better. Okay, it doesn't look like there's much room for improvement. In fact, they've lost their two best defensive linemen, Montez Sweat and Byron Murphy. We all know about that. They return pretty much the entire defensive back core. They lose the Costanzo. They lose Costanzo, the transfer from Arkansas. But outside of that, it's pretty much the same guys returning from a unit that was really, really porous last year and looked really, really porous this year. Arch Manning looked great. Who the hell didn't on Saturday out there at Texas? Quinn Ewers didn't play very much. In fact, I didn't even find a stat line on him. Don't think they expected him to play very much. Think he even said in the press conference after the spring game that he expected to only play one or two drives. But Arch Manning, 9 of 25 for 355, three TDs and interception. Trey Owens, the third, played like the backup on Saturday, 14 for 21, 228, three TDs. Cole Lord, a football player I've never heard of that is the presumed fourth on this roster, 8 of 11, 72 yards, two touchdowns. The quarterback room as a whole, guys, on Saturday was 41 for 57, 655 yards passing, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. Quick math, that's 16 yards an attempt, not a completion, an attempt, 16 yards an attempt, oh, excuse me, per completion, I actually did it on completion, 16 yards per completion on 72% passing. That defense is bad. That was my overreaction from Saturday. But again, Arch Manning looked great. Who the hell wouldn't? Or who the hell didn't, I guess I should ask, on Saturday out there in Texas?
Yeah, I was talking to Jay Will in the car, and I don't want to take anything away from Arch Manning's performance, because looking at what he did freshman year compared to this, it's night and day. Like, there's clear development there, but it's also like, yeah, you should be making those layups that they were giving you. Like, when there's not a defensive player within 15 yards of an offensive wide receiver, yeah, like, you should make a dime pass. Like, nothing to take away from what he did, because he did look great. But it's also, he did that against a very shitty defense, it looks like.
To add credit there, you still got to find the open guy.
Exactly. Right?
Not, I don't think a lot of those were, like, primary reads. Some of those might be second, third, you know, reads in the progression. But nonetheless, you're right. It was far more about blown coverages to me than it was about, my God, look at that ball. And he dropped that in a bucket.
Yeah, and to also add, like, it's good that he's shown, like, I can make the layups. If you're going to give me an easy pass, I can make that happen. Like, there's a lot of quarterbacks out there that can't do that, and that's a problem. So,
you know, I think it's almost kind of like a double-edged sword in these spring games, because if your offense looks great, then that's great. Like, Arch Manning looking great on Saturday was best-case scenario probably for Texas fans. But at the same time, you might also come away with the takeaway that our defense looks bad. But if your defense looks great during a spring game, then it's like, oh, gosh, our offense might suck. Like, our defense might be good, but our offense also didn't look good. So I think it's also like you have to have two different takeaways, and sometimes one might mean the other one. And it's just kind of hard to evaluate.
Ironically, one of their teams won this game 35-34. I think that's how Texas is going to have to win football games this year, against quality offenses. Now, they'll handle the bottom third, or bottom half, I should say, of the SEC, I would imagine, by two or three scores this fall. Yeah. But the one day that they run up against a mediocre offense that has a great day against their defense, they might be in a shootout, or they might be in multiple shootouts throughout the year. So, I love you too, honey. As I look through the schedule of Texas, I would be betting a bunch of overs in these football games.
You know, it's an interesting time, too, to have a bad secondary in the SEC, because while, like, right now you may not have a whole lot of, like, shoe-in notable guys at the quarterback position, like, you still have quite a few names in the mix, and some that are kind of on the cusp, like some that might eventually get there. And so you could have a really strong group of quarterbacks in the SEC this next year and really over the next 2 years. So a bad secondary could be a recipe for disaster at the same time.
Yeah, I feel like a bad secondary is almost always a recipe for disaster, especially in this modern age of college football, where it feels like most offenses have their biggest successes through passing. I mean, there's only a handful of teams like Michigan and sometimes Georgia where it's like they're just going to pound the rock down your throat. So it's not good that you don't have what looks to be not even a good, like, great but good secondary right now. Now again, it's overreactions, of course. Like, it could be they had an off day, could be Sark was drawing up absolute heaters all day long. So we'll see. It's not a great indicator, though.
And you would imagine if you can't throw out last year's stats, and you can't throw out last year's opponent's approach towards Texas defense, but if you were to just look at it from a bird's eye view, you would say, okay, Texas's best football players last year on defense were Montez Sweat and Byron Murphy. Let's not run the football today. You know what I mean? Maybe because they were, I believe, 121st or something in attempts per game, opposition attempts per game. So they essentially they had more attempts on them defensively than anybody else in the sport, really, anybody else in Power 5 football, really. And you would imagine, like I said, Montez Sweat, Byron Murphy can't really run the football successfully anyways. Let's chop it up to a passing attack football game today. But they weren't great at defending the pass, right? They were 125th or 120th in attempts per game and like 105 in yards allowed. So it wasn't like they were good against the pass. They were actually really, really bad against the pass.
How polarizing do you think it – like, maybe we can ask this in Quinn Ewers' perspective specifically. How polarizing do you think it kind of feels? Like, you know, you're sitting here, you're going into your final year of college football. By all accounts, you are a top 10 NFL draft pick in 2025, yet all the attention and everybody is just anticipating, almost kind of like we're waiting for you to leave because we're ready to see what's right behind you. Like, yeah, it's great, we get Quinn Ewers for one more year, but everybody just wants to see what's behind you. They're not worried about what you're going to do this year.
You know, I think it behooved Quinn to just basically not play in this football game. Had Quinn been like 21 for 36 for 285, I think this gets really loud. Like, it's going to get really loud no matter what out in Austin this year, especially if he struggles at all.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whatsoever, if he struggles whatsoever. I remember I came on the show the other day talking about how I think Arch might, like, hang out for not only this year, but maybe three more of, like, years of playing. If he plays, like, now, again, Texas's defense, really, really bad on Saturday. Has been bad for a while. However, if he plays like that at all, for two full seasons in college football, he ain't coming back for a third. I mean, he's going to be an undeniable 1-1 in the draft. So
absolutely.
But no, I think he stamped. And this is so funny that his freshman year looked like boo-boo in the spring game, right? And everybody overreacted to that. And now we have his second year in the system. He comes out and looks like God's gift to football. And everybody's freaking out about this in the inverse. And
yeah, I mean, you've got people now saying it's like, hey, should Arch Manning be the starter this year?
Saw that headline today.
Already?
Oh, yeah.
It's starting. I mean,
local beat?
You got to get clicks.
No, Yahoo.
Oh, love it. Yeah, that's the Arch Manning Google play right there. They went through the Google trends and were like, Arch Manning. Let's sneak up a little article right here, brother. Got to pay the bills. Mama needs a new pair of shoes. All that good stuff. So, the articles and the talking points are already up. They're already coming, especially if he struggles with deep ball accuracy. But I would have been more on the – I would have been more apropos to play him because of what I'm about to say right now. It's great. They return a lot of action and a lot of playing time on both sides of the football, except for their core, their wide receiver core and their tight ends core. If you look at their altar, if you look at their depth chart right now, if you just chart, hey, who's catching balls this year? I wrote it down. Seven of their top nine presumed targets are brand new to the program. Four transfers, three receivers, including Nye Black, the tight end from Alabama. He's there as well. And then in their two deep are three freshmen. Three freshman wide receivers that they're going to need to play and play well this year if they're going to be the Texas of last year offensively. I think they have all the indications of being able to do so, but how would you be able to fully gauge?
So is there really anywhere when you look across the board that you'd say, like, Texas has gotten better in this spot?
Offensive line.
Okay. Because it seems like they've kind of regressed from last year to a point where it's what?
Yo, Derek ate the car is just rude. It's just rude. Derek ate the car is wild.
That might be one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's crazy. But anyways, continue.
But no, it just feels to me like you look at last year's Texas team, and they had their flaws, but obviously it's a playoff team. And you look at compared to this year's Texas team, it's like I don't see a room where they got that much better. Now, obviously, you don't have to get that much better because it's 12-team playoff, and once you get to the postseason, anything can happen. But I just don't feel strongly about them being like national.
Oh, running back room? You know, last year, first year without Bijan.
Yeah.
I think Cedric Baxter was the true freshman last year. He's a second-year player now. You would presume they've gotten better there. They also have one of the better tackle, like, tandems in the sport as well, even though I think they lost a starter. But Kelvin Banks, I think, is still there. So they've got a really good offensive line. The quarterback room, you would presume, has gotten better. The running back room, you presume, has gotten better. They return, like I said, a bunch of defensive backs and linebackers, but those guys got to, like, physically improve before we can come out here and say that they look better. I'm with you. Overall, it looks like they're a team that took a step down when everybody is launching or vaulting, rather, higher expectations on them than they even had last year.
That's kind of what I was getting at there.
Now we've instigated the chat.
Love it.
Into fat quarterback comments. Love it. Keep pounding them out. Welcome to tonight's show. We do indeed have a loaded one for you. We're going to talk a little bit about the Deion Sanders and Kamani McClain saga that's going on out there in Colorado. We will be quick, I promise. Caleb Williams had a very, very weird interview that we felt worth talking about. It is Earth Day. Shout out to the Earth. You know what I mean? Shout out to the big sphere. But anyways, shout out to Earth. We're going to have a segment around Earth Day today. I think you guys are going to enjoy that one. I'm very, very intrigued about this J.J. McCarthy eval. Don't really know what to do with it. Want to talk about it with you guys tonight here on the show. And Michael Penix, we knew, was an absolute bar master because we've seen him freestyle in the midst of a fourth quarter football game against Oregon. However, he dropped some absolute hammer bars in this article that he wrote today for the Players Tribune. Felt it necessary to bring you that tonight. But first, I want to give a quick shout out to our friends over at Prize Picks. If you have not already, what are you doing? Run over to prizepicks.com today. Use promo code Brooks. You'll get 100% deposit match. What does that mean? You put up to $100, you will get matched instantly with $100 right there in your account today. Tomorrow is Taco Tuesday. So load it up, get that account filled up with some quiche today, and then lay it down on the line on Taco Tuesday tomorrow. Get you some fun action with prizepicks.com. Use the promo code Brooks. It is NBA playoff season, boys, so there is some money to be made over there on Prize Picks. Don't miss out. All right. What did you guys think of Arch Manning's performance on Saturday?
I kind of took it away with both two different stances. Like, one, like, watching, you got to make the throws. It's one thing to be able to, like, see a wide open guy and you can say that, oh, well, that's a layup. I mean, we always say on the show, you got to hit your layups. It's important to hit your layups, and he was hitting those. And, I mean, he looked good. You can't deny the fact that Arch Manning did not look impressive on Saturday. He looked like what he was supposed to be coming out of high school. And, again, that's the best case scenario for Texas fans to come away with on Saturday. But at the same time, I myself also had some questions about the secondary, watching just the highlight clips. But I even saw some Texas fans in the comments of the post that I was reading saying, like, look, we know, like, secondary isn't great. We understand, but Arch Manning being able to do that, what he did, that's impressive, and it should be. It should be acknowledged.
Yeah, I came away from it, and I kind of hinted at this earlier, just feeling very impressed with Sark's ability to develop quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because the Arch Manning we saw last year, game one of the spring game, was not the Arch Manning that we saw this Saturday. Like, it's night and day, and he looked so much more improved, and it's amazing what 1 year, and especially, like, he caught a lot of shit because, yeah, you're a freshman, things such that you had all these high expectations coming in, but the reality was you're a freshman. So the fact that he's made this big of a jump into sophomore year, I think, is very impressive.
I personally find it refreshing. Now, he has the last name Manning, so he gets to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it extremely refreshing that we have what we all presume to be a star. Or we all presume to be somebody that has a chance to be something really, really good at this position. We just haven't seen him play on a Saturday yet in a real game. And there's a level of patience that's being presented, right? This guy's going to wait his turn. And now you could say it's because he is, you know, the next Manning quarterback. You can do all this, but he's going to wait his turn. And it's longer than he presumed, right? Mm-hmm. He entered the Texas program thinking that 2024 was going to be his year because Quinn's got two to start and he's going to get out. Well, Quinn comes back, and now our timeline's pushed. And instead of listening or instead of hearing all the narratives this offseason about, does this mean Arch Manning needs to get out of here? In fact, the moment Quinn decided he was going to come back, the Arch Manning camp was like, nah, we're good, publicly. Nah, we're good. We're going to sit right here. I find that refreshing. Again, don't know if it's ever going to happen again with a caliber of quarterback this good, or this presumed good, but I find that refreshing that we got somebody waiting around.
Do you think that's in part because of the way the NFL is kind of, I don't know how to say it, not really looked away or discriminate against quarterbacks because of their age? Like, Michael Penix is going to be a first-round pick this year. There's a potential that Bo Nix is. These are, like, guys that are, like, deep in their careers. Yeah. So it's not like if you're not 21 and entering the league, you're behind at this point. Like, you can have those years where that extra third and fourth year where you're getting developed in college.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I would call this the Brock Purdy theory. I think this whole idea of 25 starts, it's not new to college or pro scouting, but it is very relatively a new hammering point because Mitch Trubisky did exist. Trey Lance did exist. Mac Jones did exist in first-round draft picks. I don't know if those guys are going to get picked like that anymore without a real extensive background of, like, career starts. So, yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head of the idea that almost age is preferred now. Mm-hmm. Like, experience is preferred over just, well, he's traitsy. Well, he's traitsy, but we don't know what the traits are. Right? We don't know how good they are. And that's something we're going to talk about here in just a little bit with J.J. McCarthy. I think, you know, he's got the amount of starts. He's got the amount of games played. But we don't know anything about his, ability to throw the football at the rate. Not at the ability, at the rate that is required on the NFL level. And we'll talk a little bit about that here in just a minute. But I want to talk about this Deion Sanders and Kermani McClain story. We obviously talked about Kermani last week. And again, we'll be quick here because we did hit on it last week, that Kermani was entering the portal. And, you know, the narrative around this has been directly from Deion. Deion has been very honest, or at least very upfront. I don't know the honesty of it because I don't know both parties, but you presume the coach to be telling the truth when speaking about his players. Since Cormani has gotten there, what was it, last January? Since Cormani has gotten there, or maybe last summer, it has been very tumultuous, right? It has been very much so Cormani doesn't want to practice the way we require. Cormani doesn't want to lift the way that we require. Cormani doesn't want to go to class and do the things that are required for Cormani to play for us, right? So I get that. That's the coach's perspective. Cormani McClain goes on YouTube yesterday on a pre-recorded kind of video message. I think it was 15 minutes long, and takes time out of his day to basically say he wants to go somewhere where he can be developed and where, quote, they aren't worried about the clicks. While obviously running up about 40,000 views on this YouTube video, all, you know, whatever. On this situation, guys, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm talking about like 99.9% of the time, I tend to side with the football coach because it doesn't behoove the football coach to lie in this situation. And in fact, it behooves the football coach to kind of set a standard and hold everybody to that standard. And I have this to say, man. Like, if Deion Sanders has proved anything to me as a football coach, one thing I've learned is that if you're good enough, it won't matter. Like, if you're a good enough football player to play for him and he trusts you to play for him, it does not matter. We've seen retreads on this football team that have not just been asked to leave. We've seen retreads that have been kicked off programs. Like, get out of here. We're done with you. They end up at Colorado, and they end up playing at Colorado. He took a defensive end a couple years or last year that was like, we don't want him here. We don't want him here. We don't want him here. We'll try him at Colorado. I think he played for them a good bit last year. If he has proved anything, it's that if the squeeze is worth it, he will deal with whatever juice comes out as long as he can use the juice, right? That is what he has proven. And honestly, man, this is the way I think about this. If you're too much for Deion Sanders, you're probably too much for me. You know, that's probably just my opinion on this. Like, I hate to break everybody's or break some news here, but I would imagine Deion Sanders was not the easiest football player to coach. I'm just going to throw that out there. You know, a lot of distractions when Deion Sanders was playing. Not only was he like the most flamboyant football player ever, he also played baseball. You know what I mean? Like, right. This was not an easy guy to manage at all, ever as a football player. Okay, so if there's any football coach that knows how to deal with distractions, it would probably be the biggest distraction ever himself, right there. If that guy can't figure it out, what makes me presume I'm going to be the one to be able to do it? In fact, Cormani's high school football coach is on the record talking about this. We liked him to go to Colorado because we knew Deion could put up with all this. And Deion can't put up with it. So, like, where are we at in this situation? I am normally going to reside on the coach's end of this, especially if the coach has a really extensive background on dealing with and being a distraction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some people have gotten caught up in thinking that Deion just throwing the kid under the bus to save his own face, like blame it all on the kid and that he's not taking any blame. But again, I said this last week, I think it's great and refreshing that we have someone like Deion Sanders who is going to be brutally honest with people and be brutally honest with the public and let them know what is going on with situations like this and just let us know, like, straight up, like, this is what he's got to do. He's not doing these things. He hasn't met these standards, and this is why he's not going to play here or why he's not playing here right now. This is what's going to follow him, and if he can get it figured out, then he's going to be great. But I think that Deion has done a good job of just being honest. I think it's honestly been better almost for the situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to side with Cormani on this, just but based on like looking at the two sides of the argument, where one is like, I just didn't really want to play for someone where there's clicks, as opposed to, well, this kid doesn't do X, Y, Z that is required to be a collegiate athlete at all levels, not just here at Colorado, but at all levels of this sport. So I don't love the attacking him for the whole clicks thing, like, yeah. the irony of that, just because I feel like any major person who speaks on a platform is going to be, quote, right, doing it for clicks. Like,
yeah,
like
we are.
People,
right,
yeah, people gave Dan Lanning shit for calling out Deion last year in his pregame speech. He's like, oh, you're doing the same thing. So that I'm not holding against Cormani, but the fact that it is Deion Sanders, and like you said, it is someone who has traditionally been not necessarily hard to deal with, but a handful, or it's somewhat an annoyance to others. It is not a bad look that guy can't get you under control.
Yeah, hard to deal with is not the word I would just, like, distraction.
Yeah.
Like, people are going to have to answer questions in your locker room about Deion.
Yeah.
That's a better word. Like, that is a distraction. It's not a problem. It's not, you know, anything like that. It's just the reality of the fact that this is a large figure that causes, you know, attention. You know what I mean? Creates attention towards him. So yeah, the whole idea about, like, man, again, they don't, it's not ran like a military operation up there, man. Like, they let kids skip practice. Well, it's his kids. They let his kids skip practice to go do, like, fashion walkways down runways and shit. Like, this is not a place where it's shut up and play football. This is, like, a distraction, you know, approved environment. And again, he has been very adamant about talent wins. We are all about making this roster better. There is no doubt that Kamani McLean is an immensely talented football player. It's why I truly believe he's going to get another run. It might be at a very, very big school that thinks they have a better opportunity to – control is the wrong word, but be able to deal with these distractions, right? And be able to handle all these things and get this kid to – or this young man to do the things required to be as great as he possibly can be. I doubt he ends up at a small school. You know what I mean? Right. He's an immensely talented football player. But again, if Deion can't squeeze that out of you, if he's not going to risk all the other stuff, there must be a lot of other stuff. That's what I presume.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that.
All right. Speaking of other stuff, a lot of stuff in this Caleb Williams interview. Did y'all watch this with the Pivot and Ryan Clark?
Very interesting.
How do you think he came off overall in this interview? Because I'm going to read the audience some of these quotes. And everybody knows Caleb Williams thinks highly of Caleb Williams. But I didn't expect this.
I don't think Caleb Williams did his image or his perception or people's perception of him any favors with this interview.
None.
If you like Caleb Williams, you're going to walk away with this thing. Yeah, that's Caleb Williams. That's who he is. If you are on the fence about Caleb Williams, this might have tipped you over to not liking him. And if you don't like Caleb Williams, this is going to be like, this is why I hate him.
Oh, this is fuel.
Yeah.
This is fuel for you. This is a bookmark tweet for you the moment he throws three interceptions in a football game. These are the types of interviews that when you go do them and you say the things, not just the words that he said, but the way that he said these things. And I'm going to try to impersonate some of these things, but I'm not going to be able to. The way that he said some of these things that I'm about to read you were the kind of stuff that makes people prey on your downfall, that makes people like root for you to not have success. And then when you don't have success and you go on Twitter or you sit at home and your woe is in me and why is it by picking on me? It's because of shit like this, okay? It's because of shit like this that you put on the record and on the tape. First and foremost, I think the one that went most viral was him basically saying he was mad at Lincoln Riley for playing Spencer Rattler, who at the time was projected a first-round draft pick and was projected to win the Heisman. He was the Heisman favorite. Mm-hmm. And Caleb Williams was a true freshman saying, you know, basically he kept going into Lincoln Riley's office and asking him, like, hey, what do I need to do to win this job? Because I feel as if I'm better than this guy. And Lincoln just tell him, quote, keep going, keep going, keep going. And he said that basically he had resentment for that. He was upset because he felt like he had done enough to win the job over the first round draft pick.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see. And I get the whole believing in yourself, betting on yourself aspect of it, but that's the supposed Heisman front runner to start the season. That's a supposed first overall draft. It was him and Sam Howell, like 1A and 1B coming into that year. To be like, I should be starting over this guy. I respect it, but it's also like you have to be realistic and understand, like, okay, I'm not starting because of this.
I mean, it's one thing to think that about yourself and one thing to believe in yourself that much, but, you know,
act on it and speak on it.
Yeah. Like, some things just need to stay in the old noggin, you know, keep it to yourself. Like, have that type of attitude. I think people want their quarterback or position players or any player at any position have that type of attitude about themselves. But voicing it in that type of manner and continue to talk about it now, like right before you're about to get drafted, like, it just does you no good.
And also, like, Ryan Clark asked him, so why did you go there? Like, you knew this was the situation. And he goes, I wanted to get developed. So, like, you came into this understanding, like, it's going to take a process of you taking steps to get better. But you think you should be starting day one. You think you've done enough for it. It's very interesting.
Chad's pointing out a good point. He resented that so much. Because here's how this Pivot podcast works. I don't know if you ever watched an episode. But the first thing they do is ask the guest, what's a moment in your career where you've had to pivot? Right? And he goes through this like first, you know, moment of trouble really in his career, moment of not even self-doubt. This is doubt around about the other people around him's decision-making process, right? I'm good enough. Why aren't these people seeing that I'm better than this guy? And Ryan Clark was like, basically what you're saying is like, you, why is that a pivot? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you went in there, like, that guy's good. You thought you were just going to go in there and walk over him? And Caleb was basically like, yeah, I mean, I was better than the guy in practice. I felt like I was better than him. So I wanted to know, why isn't this happening? And then he went on to talk about how, you know, once I took the job, I was going to make sure nobody else got it. And he did exactly that.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw the exit for Spencer Rattler. It was not the greatest moment for Spencer's career. But this whole idea of not necessarily overestimating his value, but this whole idea of overestimating where his stance is in the world of football started at a very young age, it sounds like.
It comes off as very entitled, I think. And that's never something you want to be this day. And especially with all these, you know, older people who watch sports, like, oh, these kids nowadays are so entitled and all that. Like, coming off and saying, like, I should have been starting day one. I was better than that guy. And I resented the coach for it. It's not a good look.
No.
Like, you just, like, you can be as right as you are. That can be how you feel, and that's fine. Like, if that's truly how you feel, that's fine. But understand that putting that out into the ether is not a good look for you.
So he was then asked about his pro day, which, if you haven't watched his pro day, it wasn't much of a pro day. He basically showed up and threw for the wide receivers that are getting drafted, you know, Brendan Rice and all those guys. Mm-hmm. And he was very robotic in his pro day. They didn't scramble him at all. They didn't roll him at all. I hardly believe at all, if at any. It was very pro style, feet in the ground, three-step, five-step, seven-step, play action, simple shit. And Ryan was basically setting him up to ask him about why he went about doing this pro day. Very boring, you know, very boring pro day. And his answer, and before Ryan even got the question out, his quote was, yeah, that was me going back to the trolling and smart-ass version of me.
Ugh.
Basically saying he wanted to troll and be a smart-ass to all the critics and show that he could do the pro style stuff. And then went on to say that if you look at the stats, I'm the most dead center quarterback available, but I just make more highlights doing the other stuff than the other guys. That's why they talk about me like that, because I just make more highlights. And then went to go on to explain what a graph looks like to Ryan Clark, saying, you know how there's a x-axis, there's a y-axis, and an x-axis.
Yeah,
there you go. Y is vertical. There's y-axis and an x-axis, right?
It's been a while.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm over here, right? I'm over here, and everybody else is right here. And then went on to say, quote, I can do anything and everything as I want to.
Do you feel like when Caleb Williams says stuff like that, and he puts, is
you
that...
think he's cooking? Do you think he thinks he's cooking?
I'm sure he thinks he's cooking, but
yeah,
do you
I bet he's like, yeah, yeah.
But do you think
that one up?
Do you think that is actually Caleb Williams, or do you think that's a Caleb Williams that is putting on kind
a
of
persona?
A persona or a facade, trying to cut through the?
This strikes me as a Caleb Williams, or as a individual whose dad told him at 16 years old that he's going to reset every market he's ever walked into, because that's the reality of this situation. And mm-hmm. Look, there are a lot of parents like this. Caleb's dad is very, very well reported as this type of human that out of high school said that he was going to redefine market plans. Okay. Out of high school said he was going to do that. And then right before his, you know, draft eligible year in college football, basically told reporters that, hey, we might just hold out on the draft entirely. You know, we might just, because of NIL, we might just come back. If we don't like the team that's going to be up first, we might just do this, right? This guy that has told his son, we have all the leverage in the world, probably came with some sayings and some talkings of, you're the greatest, right? My stepdad used to say, I ain't going to pump sunshine up your ass, son. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to, you know, pump up all the and hype you up only for your downfall, right?
Right.
This seems to me like, and granted, I have been on the record, because I've seen it. This is the most talented human I've ever seen throw a football. Because I've never seen Pat Mahomes throw it in person. Never seen it. But this is the closest thing that I would imagine there's ever going to be to that guy. Will he play like that? I have no idea. I have no earthly idea what this is going to look like on Sunday. However, you put him in t-shirts and a short and shorts, and you give a ball in that damn dude's hand, and everyone to a man will say, that guy throws it better than anybody else out here today. So I understand why he feels this way. Mm-hmm. I understand why as an 18-year-old kid, he goes out to Norman, Oklahoma, and looks at Spencer Rattler's six-foot butt and says, you're not me. I'm better than you. I watch us throw every single damn practice. I understand why this guy thinks this way 100%. Does that mean you speak on it? No. No, you do not. However, we saw the GQ shoot. We seen it. Yeah. I seen this dude in shoulder pads with no shirt underneath with his nipples out on GQ. I know what he thinks about himself. I know he's in a Sherpa suit over there. In an orange Sherpa suit. Spin that camera. He's in an orange Sherpa suit over there shooting for GQ. He was wearing mesh nets with the nips out on GQ. This is who we're talking about. So, yes, I 100% believe this guy thinks everything he says about himself.
Okay.
However, again, I'm not saying he ever plays the victim, but you are never, ever, ever, the moment moving forward in your career, ever allowed to play the victim. You can't. Why are people hating on me? Why everybody rooting on my downfall? Oh, I got haters in the grass. I got snakes in the grass. Yes, because you talk like this. You can't talk like mm-hmm. this. Humility comes before the fall. Everybody knows this.
Yeah. I just feel like watching Johnny Manziel and watching Cam Newton in their primes, and they obviously, like, it was very easy to dislike them, especially if you watch a team that played against them. But it felt like when Cam Newton talked, he was being Cam Newton. When Johnny Manziel talked, yes. like he was truly, like those were the true versions of the self. With Caleb Williams, it feels kind of fake to me. It feels kind of forced. It feels kind of like an act. And that's probably what makes me a little turned off to it, because it just doesn't feel genuine.
We got questions about the meme wall. I think we should talk through the memes right quick. Just because we can around here. All right. So, meme wall. For those of you who noticed, spin me back to two right quick. We have memes on the wall here. This one's been here for a minute. The Buffalo was on the wall for a fat second, too. Now, we moved all the memes over here to the meme wall. Okay, we got Free Our Boy Hooli, Big Phoenix Energy. We got First Down MF'er. That was South Carolina 2021.
Mm-hmm.
That was the 42-point blowout, right?
That's 2022.
Then we got Dabo dressed as Joel Osteen. That's a good one right there, mm-hmm. okay? Favorites of the Abundance of Joy. We got Caleb Williams. We got I'm Not Going To, So Quit Asking. And then we got Dan smoking a big old stogie when he came on the show. So, yeah, we got the meme wall. We need to add some more memes to that. We also have Devontae Smith over there taped to the wall because we forgot to add any type of Alabama players to the mural. So we had to put him on the wall.
I was wondering what he was doing over there.
Yeah.
He's just hanging out. We don't have any Alabama players. And here's the reason why. We got everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. We got all the meaningful college football players. I put it to you guys. Who's the face of Alabama football, not named Nick Saban?
I'd probably go Julio, but that's more based on his NFL career. That's what I would do, too.
Yeah. But you're from here. You're an Atlanta Falcons fan. You're a Raiders fan. But, yeah, anyways, I didn't know. I didn't know who to put on the wall, so they didn't make it. We got everybody else. Sean Taylor, Joe Burrow, Tim Tebow, Calvin Johnson, Cam Newton, Lamar Jackson, or as we call him around here, Lamar Snackson, Reggie Bush. We got a bunch of good ones over here. So, yeah. Anyways, there's that right there.
I was going to say, do you think that maybe this was like maybe Caleb trying to like make up for maybe any of these accusations of him maybe being a little soft, but like he comes on this podcast and now he's acting like,
I think he tried to come off as like this super intellectual, confident being. And I don't know when these things were timed and when they were released, but Victor Wembanyama had a very, not similar interview, but he had a very like sit down podcast interview type stuff going on. He basically said, I'm immune to temptation. Said, I don't party. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I don't do anything because I'm comfortable within myself and I'm, quote, immune to these types of temptations. Felt that was a little bit like, hey, buddy, who are we? Who we think we are? Jesus Christ right here? Let's be easy, bro.
He's reached enlightenment.
I mean, let's calm down a little bit. I know you're 7'5", and you can shoot a ball, but immune to temptation is a little bit much. Mm-hmm. But Victor, Victor comes off as like super humble in every other interview. Caleb does not.
Yeah.
Caleb comes off as someone who believes he's the number one overall pick and not just speaking it fake confidence wise. All right, Earth Day is today. Can you believe it?
I could believe it.
Shout out to the Big Sphere.
I didn't even know it was Earth Day.
Yeah, Jay Will, actually, I knew it was Earth Day because the kiddo comes home nowadays and tells us, like, you know, teacher talked about this today. So it was indeed Earth Day today. Explain the segment there, Jay Will.
So, like, Earth Day is all about keep sustainability of the environment and all things of like that. And so, what do you do to help the environment? Everybody thinks, oh, well, you pick up trash. So, I was thinking, well, let's have a segment centered around Earth Day, College Football Edition, where we get to pick the trash that we want to pick up around college football to make it a better place. Like, our ideal world of college football, what kind of trash are you picking up off the ground or picking out of the sport to make it better, more sustainable? So, Christian, we can go ahead and start with you. What kind of trash are you picking out of college football?
All right. So the first one I'm going to go with is ejections for targeting. Mm. I think that rule is so outdated. It's been in place for 11 seasons now. The fact that a player can make contact with an offensive player's helmet when they are the ones initiating, the offensive player, that is. That is such bullshit to me that the player is then ejected for the rest of the game. Or if it's in the second half, you have to serve a suspension in the first half. Go to basketball, make it a flagrant one, make it a flagrant two. It's fine keeping the 15-yard penalty. I understand you're trying to keep players safer, but does a player really need to be ejected for an entire rest of the game off
incidental
of one
contact versus he hunted that dude's skull?
For sure.
I can see it. Lewis Seen?
Yeah.
You got to go, buddy.
Yeah.
When you hit Kyle Pitts like that, they should have suspended your ass for the second game of that. Jesus. Well, I think it was a death.
I always think it's funny, too, that professionals are not ejected for targeting penalties. Like, the best of the best are not ejected. And yet, college athletes were expecting, like, you got to be perfect throughout this entire game or else you got to go. So, I'm good with that one.
I got one for you.
Let's hear it.
The saying, to be more like the NFL. I want to get rid of this from our college football vernacular. Every rule change we've had, whether it be 2 minute, whether it be the clock not stopping after first downs, whether it be the kickoffs that are going to come down the pike, I guarantee within the next 2 or 3 years, whatever it is, I am so sick and tired of the game of college football changing because of, quote, we want to be more like the NFL. Here's a newsflash for you. I don't like the NFL. I don't watch it. I don't watch it hardly at all. Well, most of that's because we're busy, right? We're doing other stuff around college football, but it's also, to me, an inferior product. I don't like it as much. It doesn't have as much pageantry to me. Also, the gameplay's totally different. Okay, apart from the Philadelphia Eagles, ain't nobody out here running read options. Ain't nobody out here running RPOs. Ain't nobody out here running fast-paced offenses. Nobody. Ain't nobody out here really running the air raid in pro football. In fact, it's like 12 teams trying to be Kyle Shanahan, 5 teams trying to be the New England Patriots of old, and then some smorgasbord of some different football identities. But there's no true football identity to NFL football. They all kind of look the same. They all kind of do the same stuff. College football feels different than the product we're provided on Sundays. And guess what? I like that. So quit fucking with my stuff. Quit telling me you're doing it too because you want to be more like the NFL. I don't care.
I like that.
So that would be mine.
Preach.
I like it. One of mine was any jersey with neon in it at all, except for Oregon. Oregon gets a slide here. Oregon has proven that they can
be grandfathered in.
Any other time that we see programs try and flirt with neon in the jersey or anything, it's been atrocious. Like Michigan State's, we all remember those. Whoa. The dark green with the neon State across the chest. Putrid. Get those out of the game. And then also, South Florida tried this as well, where they had a whole neon green top. Not here for it. It just looks horrible. Just stop doing it. Stick with your traditional uniforms. Just keep that trash out of here.
I think your offense is with neon green, because Oregon wears neon yellow.
Well, there's also
they don't wear bright piss green, do they?
I can't remember.
First of all, if you're pissing bright green, go see a doctor. But anyways.
Well, that's really the only color in football I feel like you can work neon with. I don't know if any, like, unless
you're anybody out here rocking neon pink.
No neon yellow or anything like that. So, like, really, yes, most of them are centered around neon green, but just keep neon out of it, man. We don't need to look like XFL teams or anything like that. Just keep your college football brand.
I got one. non-traditional neutral site games. Mm. Now, you can keep Texas, Oklahoma. You can keep Georgia, Florida.
But the bins can piss off.
Exactly. Mm. Why do we have to have week one where it's two top 10 matchups where teams that don't play each other every year, why do we have to travel to Atlanta for that game? Or why do we have to go to Charlotte? Why can't we do a home and home with that? When Georgia and Clemson played home and home in 2013 and 14, it was so exciting. Like, those stadiums were raucous. And now you're going to have that game played in Atlanta. Like, yeah, it's going to be a big moment. But I feel like you're taking away from a great opportunity to have this major moment in sports where it's, oh, we're going to play in an NFL venue instead, which, by the way, it's going to have 20,000 less people seated.
Yeah.
It feels ridiculous to me.
Mm. And it's going to be fake neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's going to be futural.
Yeah, it's almost always
you guys, that. You guys are going to play a game, LSU and Florida State, out there in the Superdome in New Orleans. And then next year, you can play in Orlando. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's like, right. What are we doing?
Yeah. Might as well just travel with each other.
Super seniors. Do away with them. Mm. Now, look, I think it's great. It's awesome. Play as long as you want. I played 5 years. I mean, shit, I was there for a fat minute, okay? I get it. But it's kind of time. It's kind of time to move on. And also, it makes my job really hard in terms of counting scholarships. So just for a purpose, like a selfish reason, that's great. You get to extend your dream of playing this lovely game of football. Piss off. I'm tired of it. Hmm. I'm just kidding. But not
my
really.
My second one, the Heisman Trophy becoming a quarterback award. I miss the days where we had a conglomeration of different athletes and different position players in New York for the ceremony. Like, they were at least represented. Now, I feel like you hardly ever get represented unless you're a wide receiver of someone like Marvin Harrison or Devontae Smith, the likes of those people. I miss the days where there was just, you had a linebacker like Manti Te'o there. Like, we had defensive presence there. We had running backs there. Now, it's kind of the base take now because everybody has it of it's become a quarterback award. But I do miss the days of where it was truly representative of who we felt was the best college football player. And I think we've kind of stepped away from that.
I agree with that. This one might ruffle a couple of feathers, but fines for rushing the field.
Mm.
I think rushing the field is one of those pageantry things that college football has. That
except for Clemson.
I'm fine with them doing that. Like, I get it, it's dumb after every game. It's corny when you beat Charleston Southern by 3 points and you still rush the field. But I feel like that's what makes the sport of college football unique. Mm. Like, you never see NFL teams have their fields rushed, even if they win the Super Bowl, so things such as that. So I like the idea of being able to rush the field. I think that the fine part of it's kind of dumb. And I think that the idea that it's something that needs to be stopped, or even rushing the court for that matter, like, leave it alone. It's fine.
Let's be quick here because we got a bunch of stuff still left, including my JJ McCarthy rant. Can we get rid of the second transfer window? Can we just like make it one? I think that will change a lot of the bitching, moaning, and complaining from college football coaches about the calendar in and of itself. I would set it for January. God forbid you got to wait a whole year before you can quit on the college that you're playing for right now. You know, I think it might behoove some of these young men to sit around for a full calendar year instead of quit after 4 months or whenever the decision comes up, because that's when it is, right? Most of these kids lose a battle in the spring. That's why they're entering right now. Well, buddy, why don't you just hang out? Why don't you just hang out in November or until September? And who knows? That guy in front of you might pop an Achilles. And then guess what? Guess who's a 15-game starter now? You. All you had to do is wait around. So many of these guys just tapping out and leaving early. And so many coaches leaving the sport or complaining about the sport or will leave the sport because the calendar's just too messed up.
Mm. My last one, Virginia Tech's mascot needs to be thrown away in its entirety. The costume. The costume. Have you seen the costume? You know,
like the little thing hanging over his nose.
Look, gobbler. A mascot is supposed to look a little intimidating, you know, got some fight to it, like a typical mascot. Not this one. This one looks like something that your fifth grader would wear at his Thanksgiving freaking play. I like that's exactly what this looks like. It looks derpy. It looks stupid. Derpy. It looks like someone's mom sewed it together in their closet at home and needs to be thrown away and completely redone. That thing is atrocious.
I would argue.
I like the Hokies, but the mascot, not okay. Here.
I would argue Notre Dame's mascot is lamer. It's just a guy dressed up in a leprechaun suit. Like, there's nothing intimidating. It's just some random dude.
This guy looks kind of sketch.
Yeah, I meant to get a picture of him and I forgot to. But
well, don't worry. We got cameras that move for the audience because we're super high tech around here. He does look kind of sketch.
He's got like a lot to you.
Is he a turkey?
I mean, it's a Hokie. Like,
are Hokies turkeys?
They gobble.
I feel like it has to be that. Like, what else would it be?
You're right. You got any other ones? I got two more.
Yeah, I got two more. I can skip one though. I think conference realignment, we all agree that's something that would behoove the sport.
I got one that ties on into that though. I want to talk about it. Can we get rid of TV alliances?
I like that.
Like ESPN's SEC, Fox's the Big Ten. And here's why. I don't care if y'all have your own TV packages. That's fine. But your TV alliances have completely removed the ability for us to have a college football red zone. And screw you for making that happen. Okay, I can't sit here and binge watch 7.5 hours of commercial-free college football because the Big Ten TV network and the SEC network can't figure out how to, you know, work together. Y'all got this massive alliance right now, and y'all are going to come together and make a super league anyways. So why don't we just make the audience happy and just agree that y'all can be competing networks and work together, you know, like they do in the NFL. Not to go against my number one thing that I want to get rid of, but if we were to take anything from the NFL product, why can CBS and Fox work together on Saturday, but you guys throw a hissy fit on Saturdays? I don't get that. I said Saturday twice. Why can y'all do that on Sunday and not do that on Saturday? That makes no sense to me, okay? Especially because I might pay like $100 a year for that. You know,
yeah.
I would pay an exorbitant amount Premier of money. Product. Nothing crazy, but yeah. I would pay a large sum in one lump sum to make sure I could watch that on Saturdays.
For sure.
Last one I have, this is just a personal preference of mine, the rule that you can't have tinted visors.
Nah.
I think it's bullshit. I know the idea of, it's to keep them safe from having concussions and be able to look at their eyes. Just take your helmet off, and if they're that hurt, there's pop buttons on a face mask now. We can pop it off so easily. Go back and look at the 2001 Miami Hurricanes with tinted visors, dude. They were so clean.
Rainbow visors, dude.
Mm. Oh my God. We had it all, dude.
Dude, there's a photo. One of the sickest photos I've ever seen is of, I think it's of Sean Taylor. He's like pointing at the camera.
Yeah.
And the visor lens is the stadium that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see hundreds of thousands of people, it looks like, in his lens. I'm with you. The not even the tinted visor. Give me the rainbow visor back.
The chrome.
That one,
yeah.
Sean Taylor's got on up, yeah, in that photo up there. That thing is sick, nasty. I don't know if you're going to be able to get there because you might have to spend four to it, honestly, because of the light. But anyways, Sean Taylor had one of the sickest visors in the world. And oh my God, look at that thing.
So tough.
Come on, RIP. But that thing is tough. He didn't get to wear it in the league. Also, Sean Taylor did something that he doesn't have it in that photo. Sean Taylor, when he got to the Washington Redskins,
would tape the face mask.
Oh, tape the face mask. It was sick as shit.
Yeah.
Everybody taped their face mask after that.
He got a fine. He would get fined for it every game, dude.
And just pay it anyways.
Legend.
Shout out. All right. Last one. Can we get rid of pay for play? Okay. I'm fine with it. Kids are making money. I want kids to make even more money, and here's how. Just give me some rev shares. I know it's really, really hard to do. I know the NCAA is going to fight it till their teeth and till they're dead in the coffin, and the only reason they're doing that is because universities don't want to do it. I understand that the power brokers that be in college sports do not want to give a percentage split of revenue to the revenue-producing athletes. However, it's the only way we're ever going to get any type of competitive balance. Competitive balance that we've never had in this sport. This sport used to be big schools paying in bags. Now it is rich schools paying in cash. Can we eventually get to the Big Ten gives a portion of revenues from their $40 million annual TV contract to each individual school? Can we not do the same in the SEC where it's 36 some odd million dollars, whatever it is? Now look, there's going to be a competitive imbalance to what I'm proposing right now because these TV contracts are not on par, meaning the Big Ten makes more per school than the SEC. The SEC makes more per school than the ACC. The ACC makes more school or per school than the Big 12. I understand this, but at least we know what it will be, right? At least we can set a value to it. At least we can set market value to it. And that's the way I would go about doing it. And you don't even have to do it like, hey, give 5% or give 10% or whatever. You can say give X amount of dollars out of the TV revenue to each individual athlete, meaning $150,000 net salary, period, point blank, all 85 scholarship guys, take that out of your TV revenue split. Well, my TV revenue split now just got cut into a more percentage portion at Florida State than it does at Ohio State. Sorry. It is what it is. Okay, find money elsewhere. But we got to get to a point where this stuff is some type of balance. But anyways, it's not going to be balanced anyways because they're just going to have the rev share and then they're going to pay out of pocket through NIL, whatever they want to do. Some type of competitive balance. And I'm not just talking about as of recent. This sport's never had it. Okay, I suggest y'all read Vince Lombardi's biography because he's one of the greatest football coaches to ever live. You will find within the first 100 pages of that biography, it's like 1,400 pages, by the way. It's about as big as the Bible. It's a football Bible. If you read the first 100 pages, you'll find out he was cheating at Creighton.
What?
Yeah. He was out here paying offensive guards at Creighton in the 20s.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Game been broke.
Can't believe
it. Okay, game been crooked. Y'all ain't just been woke. Y'all just ain't been woke. We're going to wake you up a little bit. But anyways, man, see, Chris Foster out here in the mentions again. He must have missed the episode where I talked about how Tennessee's NIL fund was doing it better than anybody else in the sport and just shows up to think I'm hating on his team again. Don't miss the show, bud.
We love you, Chris.
We love you, Chris. Shots out. Maybe that'll be our, like, come other fan bases and listen here. We'll show you love in the chat while all the Georgia fans have been listening for 5 years. We'll never acknowledge.
That's not true either.
That's not true either, but it's kind of true. All right, let's talk about this J.J. McCarthy stuff because it is very confusing. I'm perplexed. I really am. Make sure you hit that thumbs up button, like, subscribe, and rate, reviewing. Because with McCarthy, man, like, the highlights are elite, right? He's a big, athletic football player that has tremendous arm strength and arm talent. He comes from a Power 5 conference, played super elite competition. He's won at an extensively high rate, only has one loss as a starter. He's won a national title. But this is a guy, through 3 years of playing experience, only averaged 17 attempts per game over 3 years. And people hearing that stat will say, but Brooks, he only started for 2 seasons. And I will say, that is accurate, okay? But that 2 seasons of starting versus the 3-season sample size only increased his attempts per game by 6. In 2 years of starting, in the 28 games as a starter, J.J. McCarthy has averaged 23 attempts per game for 191 yards on 70% completion. J.J. McCarthy has more football games in college with less than 20 pass attempts, 10 of those, than he does football games in which he has more than 30 pass attempts, 6. Now, why is that stat important? Well, that stat's important because in the NFL, there were only 2 football teams last year, 2 out of 32, that averaged fewer than 30 attempts per game. That was Tennessee, who averaged 29.6, and that was the Baltimore Ravens, who averaged 29.4. So basically what I'm telling you is that NFL teams are right now deciding whether or not they're going to draft J.J. McCarthy to do something every single Saturday that he did once out of every 4th start in college. That's a hard thing to do. That's why I'm perplexed, okay? And I don't even know how to project it because when I go search through the games in which he actually did on a Saturday, what he's going to be asked to do every single Sunday, there's a very mixed bag. In fact, all 6 games, guess who their opponents are? Indiana, Illinois, TCU, ECU, Eastern Carolina mixing in there, Purdue, and Iowa. I mean, Iowa, good defense. Not a lot of murderers row in that mix, right? The other best defense in that mix, probably TCU. He took an L. Okay, so there's just not a lot of sample size here. Okay, he had 8 yards per attempt in these football games on 69% completion percentage. Okay, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. Okay, in one of those games, I think the only really good stat lines, the Eastern Carolina game, he's 26 for 30 in a game that was well out of hand, well out of hand. It's just not enough sample size. Guys, he is the definition of a person who has game manager stats with elite traits. He has a Jake Fromm box score and a Josh Allen highlight tape, and I have no idea what to do with it. I have no idea what to do with it, but I know what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't invest heavy draft capital in something I don't know how to project. And this is the exact definition of somebody I have no idea how to project.
That's why I think it's so interesting, because while he does have the years, like actual years, like he has multiple seasons of where he was a starter, his college resume feels like he was a 1-year starter, in my opinion. And so it's interesting to me how you don't really hear about people talking about it like that in the NFL draft scene. Like, people would just kind of hyper focus on what he did do in those big games and what he did do in those small window throws and whatnot. And it's interesting because, like, if Carson Beck had declared this year, all we would have heard about is like, well, we don't have a whole lot of big sample size of him compared to everybody else. But you could even make the argument that his sample size is comparable to J.J. McCarthy's.
The chat's doing he's a 6'2" Stetson Bennett. No, he's not. Stetson Bennett averaged almost 30 attempts per game and threw for over 4,000 yards his last year. No, he is not. He's Jake Fromm's stat line, but it's worse. Like, it's in terms of actual attempts. Like, games in which, hey, we got to win it on you, bud. Go figure it out. Like, Jake Fromm had a terrible record in those games in which he threw for more than 30 attempts per game. But, like, he's not Stetson. Stetson has a long college arc of being the guy.
My guess is this is one of those guys that the NFL looks at and says, okay, the ceiling.
Yeah, give me the trait.
The ceiling is so high. The traits are there. Obviously, I mean, it's concerning the way Michigan treated him, because if he is a first-round talent, the fact that you've kind of
hit him,
built your entire offense away from his abilities is like, why'd you do that? Like,
I have two theories as to why. One, they couldn't protect him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, any time he was dropping back, they were swarmed. The Penn State game was just as much about we're going to assert our dominance as it was, hey, we can't block that dude over there.
Right.
You know, the first round draft pick they got at the edge, I forget his name, went up, wore 44, I think, for them, went up to the combine, ran 4.49. Okay. Freak. Okay. They got that guy. They had denied Dennis Sutton on the other side and the linebacker as well, who's an elite pass rusher. Like, they had guys getting after him in the first half. I think he was sacked two or three times. They just couldn't protect him. Same thing against Iowa. I think he got sacked five times against Iowa because they finally had to drop him back and throw the football. He went 22 for 30 in that football game for a 147.
Ooh.
Threw it 30 times for 147 yards. So there is either they couldn't protect him, or they were, this is the more likely reason, they were very much so an identity based off running the football. We know well about that. It's been well documented. However, you got this traits, really good quarterback who your coach compares to Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and Josh Allen in a smorgasbord, and then you don't use him because you couldn't protect him, or your identity was to run the football, and he was so talented that on 3rd and 11, he could bail you out, which I saw a bunch of on tape. I'm not even going to lie to you. If you watch Michigan last year, in every situation where it was an obvious passing down, he seemed to thrive off of his traits. He would make something work. He would make something happen. He would extend plays. He would use his legs, and he'd do some crazy shit, make a first down. Like, he would do that. But I think why are they protecting him? Why are they hiding him? I think it was more a lot to do with the fact that they couldn't hold up on the offensive line.
So, I mean, I guess it's worth taking a shot on him. If you truly think that, you look at the traits, you look at some of the plays he's made, like, there's no doubt, there's no denying he's made huge plays in his college career.
I mean, take him after all the other guys.
Just let him go be a Ryan Tannehill.
Not a bad comp. Ryan Tannehill was a high school or a college wide receiver that started like 20 games in college. And eventually figured it out in the league.
His success was with a team that ran the ball a lot.
Correct. With you right there. Speaking of with you, I've been on this Michael Penix draft stock for a fat minute. He's a my guy in this year's draft class. And a lot of it is because of some of the stuff that came out in this letter today that he wrote to general managers in the NFL. This comes from the Players Tribune. First of all, the agent has done a slap bang up job throughout this process. Did the staged little photo of them in front of the mirror with all the formations. I call it staged because it was staged. And then they have this, right? He writes this article and it is tremendously done. I've got some bars in this I want to read. Do you have some?
Yeah, I've got a big snippet that I like.
All right. I like this one right here. I like the one about him from being from Dade City, Florida. Quote, I'm a product of Dade City, Florida. Population 7,600. No Trader Joe's, no Whole Foods, no steakhouses or country clubs. No personal quarterback coaches, no strength coaches, no state-of-the-art training equipment. Nothing about Dade City is luxurious, but that's the way we like it. It's a town full of pride, and a lot of pride comes from football. We swap out summer camps for tackle football on the concrete in the 95-degree heat. You find out quick if you're built for this game or not.
I like that one too.
Well, I got the goosies. I got the goosies just reading it. The part about nothing about Dade City is luxurious, but that's the way we like it. I like that, man. This dude's got a writing career in his future if he wants one.
It was good stuff.
What else do you like?
I like this little paragraph. Even with that success, I experienced a lot there. From lighting up practice to watching practice on crutches, from getting a shout out from LeBron to being booed in my own stadium, from fourth quarter comebacks to entering the transfer portal waiting for somebody to call. Indiana taught me to never take this game for granted. It also taught me that if I fall, I wouldn't bet against me getting up.
You know what I've learned about reading in public? The first stumble comes with a second.
Yeah.
Every time. Don't know what it is about that brain of ours, but that's the way it is.
I like that one, though, because ups and downs, but also I think it kind of shows that, you know, typically when you think of a quarterback entering the transfer portal, it's this guy that enters a portal and everybody's calling. Like in today's market, like quarterbacks like this that you presume go end up at Washington and just light it up. You think that, oh, they just lit it up somewhere, and then Washington ended up being the one that got him, and he just continued to build upon what he did earlier. But I mean, get freaking booed out of his own stadium at Indiana. It was kind of a struggle some there for a little bit until he got to Washington, and then he really blossomed. So I like that insight.
I like this one. Now seeing Troy Fontenot, Roger Rosengarten, who I wanted to reason. Rosengartner! Jalen Polk, Jack Westover, Roma Dunze, Devin Culp, Jalen McMillian, and Dylan Johnson are all on the cusp of realizing their dream. This is what brings me joy. As a quarterback, my job is to be an elevator. I need to uplift all those around me so that they too can be at their best. So just know, if you put that same belief in me, history shows I'll hold up on my end of the bargain. It's a bar. And then, do you have another one? I have one at the very end that I love. Everyone loves.
The one at the very end.
That's the whole reason to read the damn article.
Mm-hmm. No, that was it for me.
All right. So he says, so this whole article, guys, obviously is about him overcoming these injuries and everybody asking him or talking about his four season ending injuries in 4 years, all this good stuff. Okay. But this whole article was to basically put it out in the forefront that he's not worried about all these doubts about his body. And this is how he closes out this article. So I have no problem taking all the MRIs and x-rays you ask of me. Truth is, it's an EKG that will tell you everything you need to know about me. Mm. Now, for those of you who don't know, I'm going to be that guy explaining a rap lyric right now. For those of you who don't know, an EKG is a heart test. It goes through and checks out any problems or any deficiencies with your heart. An EKG is a measure of the heart. And if you take MRIs on Michael Penix, you will find out the heart, not the physical, but the literal heart it took to overcome these injuries. Bars! Absolute bars.
Bro was spitting.
All right.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
When I read that, I was like, you have a heart problem? Like, at first, it took me a second to be like, oh, wait a minute.
So you needed the dumbass rap lyricist to explain
it? Not now. It took me a few seconds. But then I was like, all right, now I see what he's saying.
Somebody said in the chat that Michael Penix is Drake's ghostwriter. Not bad. Hey, we got a whole nother hour coming up right now. Don't leave us.